Welcome to the Mindful Moments for Families and Schools podcast. This is Kelly Winkler, your host. If you are a parent or a teacher who would like to have a more peaceful, calm, and centered environment, then you are in the right place. In this podcast, we will learn to weave yoga and mindfulness into your daily routines to help both you and your children be able to regulate your emotions, feel connected, and be resilient. I'm excited to share these incredible tools with you, so let's get started. Welcome back to Mindful Moments for Families and Schools. This is your host, Kelly. We are coming up on the one-year anniversary of my very first episode of the podcast, and so I'm super excited and so grateful for all of the support I've had over this past year, and I just absolutely love sharing these tips and tools and connecting with people on the interviews, and I'm really enjoying it so much. I'm celebrating with a giveaway, so head over to my Instagram page, Mindful Moments for Families, and like the post, the giveaway post, and then all you have to do is hop over to where you listen to your podcast, rate the podcast, and write a review, and then take a screenshot of that review and either send it to me in a message, or you can post it to your Instagram and tag me. And you'll be entered for an awesome giveaway of a spa box. Again, head over to my Instagram and check out the post, and you'll see all the details of the amazing spa box that I'm giving away. So today I am excited to have on Ashley Olson, and we are going to be talking all about sleep. Ashley is a certified pediatric sleep consultant. She has three little ones of her own at home. She's been married for 12 years to a firefighter, which she says is both amazing and stressful all at the same time. She's an Enneagram 5 and loves problem solving and investigating to solve sleep issues holistically. I'm excited for you all to hear the advice and tips and tools that Ashley has to offer all around sleep with our children. We know that sleep is so integral with our mental health and so important for our children, for their overall wellness and development. So let's dive in and hear what Ashley has to say all about sleep. Welcome, Ashley. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, well, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to share with us. How about we start out by you just telling us about you and your journey, both as a parent and professionally?
Sure. Yeah. I think a lot of small businesses start out of a necessity, and that is absolutely true in my case. We had our first child in 2015. And I am an Enneagram 5, so I'm like a serial researcher. I want to know all the things all the time. Mm-hmm. So I researched so many things about having a baby, like breastfeeding, and, did all the childbirth classes and all that stuff. But I somehow missed the memo that I needed to learn more about baby sleep. I thought that they just slept whenever they were tired. Everybody makes it look so easy. And it was not the case for us. I had a really long and difficult labor with him. He came a little bit early, and he was in the NICU for a little bit of time. And so when we got home, it was like I never got to catch up from being so sleep deprived from our birth and all of that stuff. And so it was just... It just hit me like a truck almost with how terrible I felt. And it led to some postpartum anxiety. And I finally hit my breaking point from the sleep deprivation at about 4.5, 5 months. And my husband, I bless him, like I just kind of kept him in the dark about how I was feeling because I thought this is normal. It's a baby, you know, it's my first baby. Like I've just got to get through this. So, you know, I've just got to survive. And I look back now and I hated having that survival mentality because I really feel like parents can thrive in that, you know, really hard first few months of having a baby. And so he decided to research sleep training and just what all that meant and how to do it because I just wasn't in the place to do it at the time. And so he actually sleep trained our first child. And I remember the first night I got like 4 hours of sleep in a row and I felt like a brand new person. Like it had been that long of getting up every 45 to 90 minutes. And so, and that's no time for me to even go back to sleep half the time. So we got through that, you know, it was a bumpy ride. It took him a little bit to really catch on and give us some solid stretches of sleep consistently, but it was definitely moving in the right direction and it was better than it had been. So like I was happy. Then I got pregnant with our second child and I knew that I could not have a repeat experience, especially while having another child at home and solo parenting a lot of the time because my husband works shifts. And so I dove in to all the things baby sleep and learned everything that I didn't know with my first, especially with newborns. And I had a totally different experience with her sleep. And after, you know, talking to some friends just about both the differences between my first and my second, and what I did differently. They were all like, why is this not something that you are doing? Like, you could help so many people. And I was really hesitant at first for a lot of reasons. I didn't want to own my own business. Like, I never had that sort of spirit to be an entrepreneur. And I also, you know, through all of my research, kind of saw the polarizing effects that sleep can have on the mom community. And I just thought, you know what? I don't even want to like deal with it. I don't want to be a part of that. Like it stresses me out. I don't have thick enough skin, all the reasons, all the things. And there were just so many little, I call them God winks, like just little things along the way where God was just really confirming that this was the path that I needed to go on. And so I actually applied for a certification program without telling anybody I was doing it. I was like, you know what? If they don't accept me, then it's not a big deal. I did what I was, you know, what God told me to do, and then I don't have to tell anybody if I don't get in. But I did. And so I had, you know, the talk with my husband, and he was like, of course, like why wouldn't I support you doing this? So that was like 3.5 years ago, and here I am now.
It's such an incredible story. I love hearing that organic build of something that just, like you said, you just were being led there, you know, one step at a time. And I think that you're right. Like a lot of businesses, especially I think a lot of businesses that moms start do come out of, you know, the need to share experiences that we have with our children. That's exactly where my business grew from as well. And so I think that it's a beautiful story. And you know, thank you for sharing that with us, that journey.
It was definitely a journey.
So as a sleep consultant, what is the most common challenge that you find that the parents have around sleep?
Obvious, you know, so much of infant sleep impacts our own sleep, and that's where we really struggle because it's not something that we are typically used to, you know, that super fragmented nighttime sleep. And we come to expect that. Like, we know our sleep is not going to be perfect for who knows how many years. Like, there's always going to be some sort of disruption, especially when you have more kids. There's more opportunities for them to wake you up. But it's that super fragmented, frequent waking that really starts to impact, especially mental health, because you know, one of the ways that they treat, you know, postpartum anxiety or depression is to improve parents' sleep. And so, whenever you're getting up so frequently all night long and you're not getting into any sort of restorative sleep, and then you can't nap during the day, and it just really builds and builds and builds. And I feel like people will finally reach out whenever they're sort of at the end of that rope, or they feel like they've hit rock bottom. And so it can feel more challenging at that point to find that light at the end of the tunnel, to feel like you can get out of that hole of sleep deprivation. And making changes sometimes feels harder than remaining in the situation that you're in. And so I'm not going to say convincing, because I never want to pressure parents to feel like they need to sleep train or change any of their habits or situations, but it's definitely like re that reassurance that yes, it is possible that your sleep could get better. Like, I don't think that what we were doing will make it any worse than what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so true because, when I work with parents, I'm always telling them, like, check in with yourself if you're having trouble regulating your emotions, check in with yourself about your needs. And, sleep is one of those things that it's so hard when we're not getting good solid sleep. It's so hard to, use all of our other tools and make sense of a situation and not feel overwhelmed so quickly without that, without that rest and that sleep that our body needs.
Oh, totally. I feel it too. I mean, I have a sick little one right now, and I know that that's going to happen, and I just have to like get in my head, okay, you've got to go to bed early tonight because it's not going to be a super great night of sleep. So, it's just t being conscious of that and knowing, okay, I've got to prioritize sleep in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and then also too, sometimes I find myself feeling guilty if I have to, lay down for a 15-minute power nap. But sometimes, you have to fit it in where you can. And like you said, going to bed early, being mindful of that, like when you know there's going to be a situation where you're not going to get the best night's sleep, or you didn't get the best night's sleep the night before, staying on top of it, really.
Exactly, yes.
So we know in infant stages, right, in newborn, that's always a difficult time with the babies learning to sleep for longer stretches of time. But during other developmental stages, do you find that sleep issues pop up during different times of development, or are there any like certain patterns that you notice?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the 4 month sleep regression is a huge thing. I know most parents who hear that word, like, they know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's where, like, as a newborn, their sleep is developing, their circadian rhythm is immature. And so as they get a little bit older, they hit maybe that 2.5, 3 month mark, you kind of feel like you're hitting your stride and sleep is sort of coming together. And that's because that circadian rhythm is becoming more stable and maturing. And so you kind of get like, oh, okay, well, we're out of that sort of super fragmented sleep. We're going to get some long stretches. You get comfortable with that. And then, like, out of nowhere, their sleep patterns change again and they hit that 4 month regression. Like, sometimes it's like the night they turn 4 months, it's like, it just happens. And that's really where there's a big developmental shift in their sleep. It's where they had only two sleep cycles as a newborn. So then it matures into adult-like sleep patterns where there's more light sleep, more opportunities for waking up. And so that's where people were like, oh my gosh, like, they were sleeping so well and now it's not. And that's typically the time when people start to make some changes to their sleep habits. Another big one is crawling. Evidence shows that when kids are learning to crawl, that is the most disruptive, like, gross motor milestone to sleep. You could have up to 2 to 4 weeks of sleep disruption from just figuring out how to crawl.
Wow, that's so fascinating. And it's really interesting that, this is not something that is talked about, openly. Like you said, in we go to all the childbirth classes, and there's books on this, I guess, but I feel like it should be like a more of a common conversation, these stages that, you know, I have four children and I have never heard that crawling disrupts their sleep. So that's so interesting. And I feel like it's I wonder why it's not more of a conversation.
Yes, yeah, definitely. That's what I work so hard on with social media is like normalizing some things and like letting people know it can get better, and but it's not always going to be perfect, right? So I like to kind of change that ideal sort of, the idea that people have about infant sleep and what they can achieve with sleep training. Like, it's not just, all right, you let them cry it out for a night, they're going to sleep great forever, And so I think sometimes that's what people have in their head whenever they decide to sleep train, that they're never going to have any sort of disruptions or, ever have to sort of work on their habits again. It's not just one and done.
Yeah, and I think it's also, I don't know what you feel about this, but I also think that, you know, people are always, oh, how's your baby sleep? Your toddler sleeping? And it's almost like if your kid is not sleep, it's almost like you feel embarrassed or ashamed that, you know, if your kid's going through a rough patch. And like you said, it really should be normalized that, you know, they're going to go in and out of those patterns, and it's natural.
Right. I always say I don't sleep well every night either. So sometimes it takes me a longer time to fall asleep, or sometimes I wake up more often in the middle of the night. And so, we can't hold our kids to a different standard than we would hold ourselves to.
Yeah, that's so true. And you know, my kids, I have, like I said, I have four kids, and two of them struggle with anxiety. And that really, you know, we got through the baby phase and all of that. And then, you know, with each of them, you know, they hit a stage where, and it still happens, you know, and one is 17 and one's 11, and they still struggle sometimes because when they're having a day where their anxiety is increased, you know, their sleep is disrupted a lot.
Oh yeah, I mean, same. My youngest is almost two, and I have general anxiety probably, but definitely postpartum anxiety. And in times where that is at a high, then yeah, I feel that impact in my sleep for sure. I can like pinpoint it exactly.
Right. Yeah. So there's so many things that can contribute to sleep disruptions.
Totally.
Speaking of, have you seen any trends of increased issues during this time of the pandemic?
It's interesting because I really noticed more and more families reaching out because they were working from home, right? And not being able to send kids to daycare. And so their sleep issues that they may have brushed off because daycare can handle it, it's, if they're not having to deal with short naps and stuff at home. But when they are working at home, they need their kids to be on, a better routine, and they need them to sleep better. And parents need that better sleep at night because they're not getting any sort of break. They're, working and parenting at home at the same time, and that is a huge stressor. And so more and more families that maybe wouldn't have really addressed much of their sleep issues, we're like, okay, no, we can't do all of this and have a child who doesn't sleep well. And so I think that was really the biggest thing that I noticed, sort of like March, April, May of last year, where we're just kind of parents hanging on by a thread and just saying like, okay, we need a change. Like, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah, that's so true. I think so many issues that maybe parents weren't totally aware of or just weren't putting attention to. Being home all the time with your kids really brought some light to a lot, I think a lot more that kids were struggling with, and then in turn the parents were struggling with.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure.
And I know for me, like I said, I have older kids. My youngest is six, but I know during the pandemic I noticed just a trend of staying up later, not being on such a strict schedule as we were, and because the kids weren't having to get up early and go out of the house to school, and we weren't going out of the house to work, so everybody was kind of like the mornings were a little bit different. And I think I talked to a lot of people that had that same shift of like their kids' bedtime so slowly creeped later during the pandemic. And I think after a, would you say like after a extended period of time, then you start to notice that that's really affecting your child.
Oh, totally. Because the best sleep they're going to get, like the most restorative, highest quality sleep, is early in the night. So the later and later they're going to bed, they're losing that, really great sleep time. And that then accumulates over time. And then we see more of those sort of emotional disruptions and really being dysregulated and things like that. And I mean, I've seen it with my own kids for sure.
Yeah, and it's a, you think like, okay, if my kid's getting a certain hours of sleep, even if it's shifted, but that's not the case. Like that's really, again, really interesting that, we don't know that early part of their sleep is during the early part of the night is the most valuable.
Yep, I feel like there's a saying that I'll probably butcher if I try it, but it's like and let's see, how's it go? An hour of sleep before midnight is worth two after or something. Like it, I don't know. It's just
Okay, yeah.
the better quality before is more important than the quality of the sleep after midnight.
Wow, very interesting. And I love how you work holistically with families. So can you tell us about some of the ways that you do that?
Yeah, so when people want to talk about sleep training, they're so focused on the method that you're using, right? There's so many options. There's a bunch of controversy on which route you choose and all the things, but honestly, it's the least important part of the puzzle. If you feel like you've nailed the method, but the timing of their sleep is off, then it's not going to work. Or if you have them in, sleeping in a really bright room and there's a bunch of distractions around them, but you nailed the method, it's not going to work. And so you really got to look at all the aspects of how can we set them up to be most successful at sleeping well, and then consider any sort of behavioral interventions that we need to make to change habits that they may have around sleep. So you do have to look at their circadian rhythm and, getting however much day sleep they need and making sure that they're in sort of an optimal sleep environment and you have a routine established. Like even research suggests that a simple implementation of a bedtime routine can resolve, some sleep issues in as little as like 4 days, they're even saying. So if you can get a lot of that stuff into place, then sleep training itself can be pretty straightforward.
That's amazing. So that kind of brings me to the next question. So because you're looking at your environment and so many things and a routine, what do you think the connection, if any, you is between mindfulness practices and a healthy sleep?
Well, I know that whenever our central nervous system is regulated, our bodies are producing sleep hormones and doing the things that they're supposed to do in order to sleep. And so, whenever we're practicing mindfulness, when we're aware of those things, then you can see the shift in sleep by having that all sort of connected together.
That's really a great point. And that brings me back to the anxiety piece, because when we're feeling anxious, right, our nervous system is not regulated. And so it really makes sense that our sleep is disrupted during those times, because we're not releasing those hormones and everything that's going to help us to fall asleep and stay asleep. So
Right,
it's
everything, it has to be balanced out.
Yeah, that's really great. So what are three tips, your top three tips that you give to parents who want to move towards better sleep habits?
So typically, well, one of the myths that we always see is keep them up all day and they'll sleep better at night, right? And that's the last thing that I want to deal with is a cranky kid all day that I'm trying to keep awake and on the off chance that they'll somehow sleep better during the night. Now, obviously, not every kid needs as much day sleep and they grow out of naps, but being mindful of sort of how much sleep do they really need for their age and doing what we can to distribute that between their day and their nighttime sleep. So definitely like get those naps in. Don't try to skip them. Early bedtimes are great. Don't be afraid of them. And that's really one of the big things that I see with families is that fear of, oh my gosh, if they're already waking up this much with this bedtime and I have to put them to bed earlier, that's so many more wakings. And more often than not, that is, not the case at all. So don't be fearful of that. Another one would be don't be afraid of using white noise. It's not a bad prop by any means to have for your child. It doesn't mean that they'll never be able to sleep without it. But again, when we look at research, there's only benefits for using it. It helps you fall asleep faster. It helps you stay asleep longer. And it improves the overall quality of your sleep because you're not being woken up from sort of those external little noises that you wouldn't notice if the white noise was on. So that's a really big hold up is parents don't want their kids to be dependent on white noise, but my argument is that everybody benefits from using it. So don't be afraid of that. Like if it's that simple to improve your sleep, you've got nothing to lose. And then another tip is a lot of times I'll see families where only one parent can do bedtime. And this can work. It can be okay if it's working for you, then there's no reason to change that. But sometimes it leads to a lot of burnout, being the only one who can do their bedtime routine. You can't leave the house, at a certain time because you've got to be home for bedtime. And so making sure that you sort of divide and conquer and you split up that bedtime responsibility can really help on, a lot of different levels because we want our kids to have multiple attachment figures in their life, and it can really save on that parent burnout whenever you're not the only person who can do that thing for your child.
Yeah, that's a great tip. We definitely fell into that trap in my house. Not as much when my kids were infants and toddlers, but more when, my oldest, when she was really having her most difficult times with anxiety, she really only wanted me, which was really a stressor because I had three other younger children who, also needed their routine, their bedtime routine, and for my husband to take that on with all three by himself was it was really a challenge. So that's a really great tip to definitely take turns right from the get-go so they get used to having both of you do that routine. That's a great tip. And the other two tips were also awesome. And I think that as part of the mindfulness piece, part of the routine that you establish, the white noise is great. My kids use fans. They have ceiling fans in their rooms, so we always put them on. And sometimes people say like, "Oh, you even leave the fan on? They don't mind the fan, like when it's cold outside." And I'm like, "No, it helps them sleep, and that's fine with me." But I think there's a lot of mindfulness practices that we can implement into the bedtime routine leading up to the time to go to sleep. So do you practice anything like that with your children?
Yes, we have a book that we read that talks about like being present in their moment, drawing more attention to their body and their breathing, really helps them to like have that wind down, which is so important because it feels like they're always wired and like playing the most right after dinner and before bed. And you're like, no, we got to bring this down a little bit. My oldest is 6, and so we've just started doing some breathing practices with him because we've noticed he's been kind of more emotional than he used to be, which I don't know if it's a part of growing up, because obviously he's my oldest, so I don't have anything to compare it to, or if it's just the stress of the last year that's kind of caught up to him. I'm not sure, but we've been working on our belly breathing, and he, I've noticed even during the day, whenever he gets frustrated with his siblings for whatever reason, like he closes his eyes and he'll breathe through his nose and he'll let it out, and then he's like, okay, now I can handle this situation.
I love it. That's what we'd want. We want them to be able to pull on those tools that we're giving them. He maybe learned it from that book you were reading at bedtime, but he's able to grab it when he needs it during the day too. So that's fabulous. And yeah, we use in my house also books and meditations, guided meditations a lot of time at bedtime. As I said, my two of my kids have anxiety, and my 11-year-old, he actually his anxiety a lot of times is about falling asleep. He worries he's not going to be able to fall asleep. Like he always will say that to me before bedtime, like, what if I can't fall asleep tonight? So we've had to really have like a nice consistent routine with him at night to help him like ease into to bed, and then do some meditation and help him to fall asleep.
Yes, totally. My therapist recommended meditation months ago, and it's a night and day difference on how much easier I fall asleep at night after actually doing my meditations.
Yeah, it really does. It really is a great thing to pair with bedtime, and I think you can start it, really young with kids. Even if it's just doing the breathing, or like you said, just drawing their attention to their body, and maybe doing some squeezing and relaxing of the muscles. Even 2 and 3 year olds can do that. So it's really nice to pair that with a bedtime routine.
Yes, totally agree. And it really, again, brings in that sensory component as well. If you're adding in the squeezing and, maybe doing a massage or some hand hugs or something like that, it really helps them with that falling asleep and staying asleep.
Yeah, and I even remember with my kids when they were infants, sometimes when they would be having a difficult time or settling down and crying, sometimes me doing the deep breathing, would all of a sudden I would notice that they started to shift in their breathing and started to calm down and settle in. And that was just with me doing the deep breathing. Now they were babies, so I wasn't telling them to take a deep breath, but I was doing it. If I was holding them on my chest, and they would feel that and then sort of regulate along with me.
Oh, totally. Yes. The co-regulation is so important. We have mirror neurons, and so they're picking up on our level of stress. And so that's why I always tell parents, like, if you're having trouble regulating yourself, you can step away. Like, it's okay. You can wear earplugs if, you find yourself, not being able to, center yourself back into a calm place. And again, it's okay to put them down in a safe place and step away because it's more important for you to be regulated than it is for you to be responding in that moment. So I always say no response is better than an anxious response. So it's definitely okay to, hand them off to a partner or something like that, so that you can bring yourself back to center. And then you notice your baby calming easier at that point.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, because I think that bedtime can be a really stressful time for everybody in the house. If you're struggling with that, you know, if you're not feeling good about your bedtime routine, if you're not feeling good about like your child being able to fall asleep easily, I know that I sometimes, you know, find myself getting feeling stressed, you know, coming to like the bedtime time, like, oh, this is going to be a battle again, right? This is the kind of like the energy that we're bringing to it, like, oh, I'm going to have to fight this again. And kids pick up on that. So I think that's like a really important part of also part of the routine. Like I talked about bringing the meditation to your children, but also for yourself, like make sure that you're regulating yourself leading up to the bedtime, you know, make sure that you are, you know, finding some, you know, deep breaths and keeping yourself grounded before you even begin the process.
Right. Yeah. And it's so hard at the end of the day because we're all tired, you know. We're all just sort of reached the end of the day. We want to clock out. And so getting through, you want to just get through bedtime and just get through it as fast as you can. And really we want it to make it a good connection point at the end of the day for everybody so that they feel safe going to sleep and they feel comfortable, you know, having that separation. And so you've got to, like you said, bring the right energy to it if you want it to be a smoother process.
Yeah, definitely. That's it's not the easiest thing in the world, you know. Anytime when we're feeling overwhelmed and stressed to remember that we have to regulate ourselves before we can help our kids. But, you know, I talk about that when our kids are having meltdowns, you know, during other times, but you know, and it applies just as much to the time of bedtime and sleep. It's so hard to do, but the payoff is that, you know, it will be a smoother process
Right,
if
especially,
you can remember.
yeah, especially when you're thinking big picture, like the little things that you can implement along the way just pay off, as opposed to getting through it like night after night after night. If you can just practice putting those, you know, mindfulness things into place, especially during the routine, then you start to notice that shift happening and where it actually becomes like an enjoyable part of the day and the
Yes.
day that you're part of the day that you're dreading.
Yeah, because and you mentioned the word connection, which I think is so important, especially during the toddler years, I feel like when they start to have a little bit of that start to notice when you're leaving the room and all of that. And I think that them feeling that nice connection in that routine during that time leading up to the bedtime can help ease that anxious feeling at bedtime.
Yes, I mean, nighttime fears are a huge thing that come through at that point. And so bedtime can feel sort of scary at that point for them. So whatever you can, that connection just helps them feel safe knowing that, you know, you've got that next connection point planned for in the morning and, you know, making that sort of a part of that routine as well, talking about that next time that you're going to get to spend time together.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for all these tips. This has been great. Is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners?
So I have several different ways to connect with families and different ways to work with me. Obviously, I know it's been a tough year, and so working one-on-one and investing in sleep can be a challenge. So I have a DIY course that families can do. I have a month-to-month membership where families can get support in a Facebook group, and that's filled with extra resources as well to help you troubleshoot some of those common sleep issues that come up, and it's always growing. And then obviously I'm present on social media. I'm on Instagram at Heaven Sent Sleep, and I am active in stories and on posts. So you can always find me, always DM me, ask questions, whatever you need.
Well, thank you. I will link your website and your Instagram page in the show notes so it's easy for people to find you and see all your great resources. And again, thank you so much for joining us today and taking the time out of your day to give us these wonderful tips.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Have a great day.
You too.
That was such an awesome conversation with Ashley. So many wonderful tips and insights about sleep. Here are some takeaways. One, fragmented sleep affects our mental health. Two, be mindful and prioritize your sleep. Three, 4 months old is when babies most often experience a sleep regression. Five, crawling is also a disrupt in our child's sleep. Six, sleep patterns change. It's not always going to be perfect. Seven, the highest quality of sleep occurs early in the night. Eight, bedtime routines can help resolve sleep issues in as quickly as 4 days. Nine, the nervous system being regulated is key to sleep. 10. White noise is a great tool. 11. Keeping yourself grounded and regulated will help your child to regulate as well. And 12. Making important connections around bedtime will help your child feel safe in falling asleep. I hope that you all enjoyed that episode with Ashley and that you are able to use these tips to help bedtime become more of an easier and time for you to connect with your children rather than a battle. And I will be back next Monday to talk about some tools and some bedtime meditations that you can do with your children. So we'll be continuing this conversation about sleep next Mindful Monday. And in the meantime, remember, take a deep breath. Thank you for joining me on my mission to spread peace and joy by introducing children and families to the power of yoga and mindfulness. I could not achieve this goal without all of you listening and trying these tips with the kids in your life. If you enjoyed this episode and found it helpful, please subscribe and leave me a review. If you would also suggest this podcast to parents and teachers, I would be so grateful. If you would like to connect with me, you can find me on Instagram at Mindful Moments for Families and on Facebook at Kidding Around Yoga with Kelly. For more information on my offered programs, such as yoga classes for children and adults, workshops and professional development, and corporate chair yoga, visit my website at kiddingaroundyoga.com/Kelly. I'll see you all here on our next episode, but in the meantime, remember, take a deep breath.